This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Welcome to Trumpet Hour. I'm Jeremiah Jacques, and we thank you for joining us on the program today. Our first segment of the show turns the spotlight on the Republic of Turkey, or Turquia, as the Turks now prefer to have their nation called. Under Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Turkey has long been a close partner to Vladimir Putin's Russia. But this year, Turkey made a sudden and dramatic shift away from Russia and began tilting instead toward the political center of Europe. This move is altering the geopolitical balance of the region and setting the stage for some remarkable future events. Our second segment of this episode looks at a shift that is underway within German society. It's a shift that mirrors much of what's occurring in the United States and in other Western nations, away from traditional values and toward a kind of almost Babylonian type of more deviant living. And the only political body in the German arena that stands ready to challenge this shift is the far-right Alternative for Deutschland. This changing landscape is pulling Germany in two different directions, and the outcome will be alarming, as we'll hear about in a report from Trumpet writer Josue Michels. The third segment will take a look at how research that was originally conducted in part by using fetal cell lines is used to produce over-the-counter and prescription drugs and other common products, which we'll learn about in a report from Trumpet writer Mr. Abraham Blondeau. And then our last word today takes a look at the immense value that there is in studying the lives of great men and emulating in our own lives what is admirable in them.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Sobering numbers are emerging about Russian casualties from its invasion of Ukraine, as well as very sobering numbers of casualties on the Ukrainian side. And there is yet another casualty of this war that has recently become clear, and that is the bond between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Now, for the last several years, Erdogan has closely cooperated with Putin's Russia. It's always been a bit of a balancing act. You know, Erdogan has always played Russia and the West off of each other to a degree so that he can extract maximum concessions from both sides. But for the most part, in recent years, largely because of Erdogan's anger at the way the Western coalition was operating in the Syrian civil war, he has leaned Turkey toward Russia. This was clear from the way Turkey bought a great deal of weaponry from Russia, including the vaunted S-400 missile system. It was clear from Turkey's ramped-up exports to Russia during the war on Ukraine, and its ramped-up imports of Russian energy, even while the U.S. and Europe were working to boycott that energy as a punishment to Russia. Turkey's support of Russia was also clear from the way Turkey's banks were long serving as middlemen for the sanctioned Russians. And it was clear from the diplomatic and political support that Erdogan gave to Putin during the first 16 months of the war. As recently as May, Erdogan touted his nation's special relationship with Putin, and he said, quote, "Russia and Turkey need each other in every field possible." And he called Putin his dear friend. Another major aspect of Erdogan's lean toward Russia was his decision to block Sweden's attempt to join NATO, or the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. That's a military alliance of mostly European nations. And the Swedes were terrified to see Russia's full-scale war on Ukraine. So back in May of 2022, that fear prompted them to end decades of neutrality so that they could try to join NATO. This was great news for Europe, since Sweden has one of the world's top-ranked air forces and a geographic location that allows it to exert a lot of control over the Baltic Sea. So bringing Sweden in would add real might to the NATO alliance. But the rules of NATO say that every member of the group has to approve any new nation joining. And Turkey is a NATO member, so Erdogan blocked Sweden's bid. Now, Turkey had some of its own reasons for this, related to some prisoners that Sweden had refused to extradite. But nevertheless, Vladimir Putin sees NATO as adversary number one. So Turkey's block on Sweden joining, and thereby making NATO that much stronger, was a godsend for Russia. So this has been Turkey's general stance for the last several years. And to many onlookers, it seemed that Turkey would remain indefinitely, perhaps even increasingly, aligned with Russia. But the trumpet has actually been expecting Turkey to break with Russia and to instead band together more closely with Europe. And in early July, Erdogan suddenly began steering Turkey in a starkly different direction. It was on July 8th that Turkey surprised the world by freeing five of Ukraine's most feared commanders. These were high-ranking officers whom Russia had captured in Mariupol, Ukraine, back in May of 2022. Some of them were from the Azov National Guard, which Russia accuses of being Nazis. So back in September of 2022, Russia agreed to release these five men in a prisoner swap. But Putin didn't want these highly capable commanders to be back on the battlefield, where they had previously done so much damage to Russian forces. So a deal was struck with Turkey, acting as a third party. And under the terms of the deal, these five men had to remain in Turkey until the war was over. Turkey's sudden decision to return these five men to Ukraine in July, even while the war was still raging, blindsided the Russians. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, quote, "No one informed us about this. The return of the leaders of the Azovites from Turkey to Ukraine is nothing more than a direct violation of the terms of the existing agreements." End quote. If you realize how much is at stake for Russia and for Putin personally with this war, then you see that such a move by Turkey was a major slap in the face to Russia. But that wasn't all the Turks did. At the same time as that prisoner release, Erdogan issued a statement saying that he now supports the idea of Ukraine joining NATO. It's hard to think of a statement that would be more infuriating to the Russian leadership. And then an even bigger bombshell came 2 days later. That's when Erdogan attended the NATO summit in Vilnius, Lithuania, and he met with Sweden's prime minister, Ulf Kristersson, and NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. And we don't know what specifics were discussed in this meeting, but we do know that after it ended, Erdogan agreed to lift his ban on Sweden's entry into NATO. This was a vital win for Europe, and it was a major black eye for Russia, especially since Russia's most important land and water transport hub, the city of St. Petersburg, depends on access through the Baltic Sea. And now, between Sweden and Denmark, NATO could prevent Russian ships from getting in and out of the Baltic and to St. Petersburg. Politico summed up the gravity of this move very well on July 13th, writing, "Sorry, Russia, the Baltic Sea is NATO's lake now." There have also been major developments regarding what could be called Russia's war on food. Ukraine produces huge amounts of wheat, corn, barley, sunflower oil, and other food products. So much of all this is produced there that Ukraine is actually nicknamed the breadbasket of Europe. And because of Ukraine's food exports, millions of people around the world, especially in Africa and the Middle East, are able to put food on their tables. But of course, all of this was jeopardized back in February of last year when Russia expanded its attack on Ukraine into a full-scale war. For the first few months, there were serious concerns that Ukraine would not be able to export food anymore, at least not anywhere near its pre-war levels. So food prices shot up around the world, and analysts feared just how dire the situation might become. But then in July of 2022, an international agreement was reached that let Ukrainian food exports be shipped out of the Black Sea, despite the war. This agreement was called the Black Sea Grain Initiative, and it was a significant deal. It allowed about 36 million tons of food to be shipped out of Ukraine and to hungry nations around the world. As a result of it, global food prices dropped roughly 20%. So that brought a year of relative stability to the markets, but then Russia said in July of this year that it was withdrawing from the deal, and that it would actually start to target any ship that visited any of Ukraine's Black Sea ports. Just after that Russian announcement, to show that they were serious, the Russians began a series of missile attacks on Ukraine's grain production, storage, and export infrastructure. The result of this was that wheat prices around the world and other food prices began soaring. The strategy behind this is evil, but it's easy enough to understand. Russians think that if they can disrupt global food supplies and threaten to starve enough people, then that'll convince the West to drop sanctions that are currently on Russia, and then Russia will be better able to fund its war on Ukraine. Margarita Simonyan is the editor-in-chief of Russia's RT outlet, and she made this very clear back in July. She said, "All of our hope is in the famine. The famine will start now, and they will lift the sanctions and be friends with us because they will realize it is necessary. All our hope is in the famine." So it's a truly evil strategy that Russia devised here, but there's one big problem with it, and that is that Turkey controls the Bosporus and the Dardanelles. Those are the two choke points that allow ships into and out of the Black Sea. Turkey also controls the lion's share of the Black Sea coast and has a powerful naval presence there. So Turkey had played a key role in brokering the July 2022 grain export deal. And as part of Erdogan's recent break with Russia, Turkey is now working with Ukraine to allow food exports to continue despite Russian objections. After a July 21st phone call with Erdogan, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said the two sides had, quote, coordinated efforts to restore the work of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, end quote. And then Erdogan's press service reiterated this as well, saying Turkey was working to find ways to safeguard passage through the Black Sea's grain corridor despite Russian threats. In the time since then, the Turks and Europeans and others have struggled to get Ukraine's exports back to the levels before Russia withdrew from the deal. But Turkey remains determined to keep on working to override Russia's war on global food security. The Turkish stance on this is yet another blow to Putin's Russia and another boon to Europe. So many are asking why Erdogan made this dramatic change. Why did Turkey suddenly break with Russia and align far more with Europe? At present, his reasoning hasn't been disclosed, but it may have involved Turkey's desire to buy F-16 fighters from America, or it may have involved the West softening its de facto sponsorship of the Kurds. It may have been motivated by fears that Russia will lose the war, or worries about Western sanctions being levied on Turkish banks, or maybe it was related to some kind of assurance about eventual Turkish EU membership. Or it might have been some combination of several of these factors. We may never know the exact details of what prompted Erdogan's sea change. But we do know that Psalm 83, written some 3,000 years ago, warned us that we should expect modern Turkey to align with a German-led Europe. This psalm is about a group of countries who will form an alliance in the near future. Verses 6 through 8 give several names indicating which specific countries will be in this block. It states, "The tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagarenes, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines, with the inhabitants of Tyre Asher also is joined with them. End quote. In our booklet, The King of the South, we give the modern names of these nations that are named here. Edom and Amalek, those mean modern Turkey. The Ishmaelites mean Saudi Arabia and its Gulf neighbors. Moab and Ammon are Jordan. The Hagarenes, that means Syria. Gebal and Tyre signify Lebanon. The Philistines means modern Palestinian Arabs. With some of these, we can't be entirely confident in the exact accuracy of the modern designation, but the general idea is clear. And then the other power mentioned in this passage, Psalm 83, is Asher. This name is related to the name Assyria, and that's a term that Bible prophecy uses to describe modern-day Germany. For more about that, you could order your free copy of our booklet called Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. So anyway, Germany will clearly be a member of this future alliance that's described in Psalm 83, and in fact, Germany will be the main power behind the group. The Bible makes clear that Germany, in the end time, will lead a unified European military superpower. So really, this mention of Asher in Psalm 83 is about more than just Germany itself. It connotes the whole German-led European bloc. So it's talking about Turkey and these other Middle Eastern nations allying with a German-led Europe. And what's most alarming is the Bible's revelation about what exactly this alliance will do after it emerges. Verses 4 and 5 say, quote, "They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against you." End quote. So there it is. The goal of this massive alliance is to destroy the modern-day nations of Israel. The Bible shows that the name Israel actually describes 12 nations, but the context of this particular passage shows that it's directed to only three of them. The little Jewish nation in the Middle East, now called Israel, is one of the three, and the other two are America and Britain. For a clear explanation of that, you could order your free copy of our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Right now, America, Britain, and the Jewish nation are partnered with Germany and with its European allies, but the Bible makes clear in this Psalm 83 passage and in numerous other scriptures that this partnership will end in disaster for the US, UK, and Israel. Germany and these other nations, including Turkey, aim to utterly destroy America, Britain, and the Jewish nation. They want to cut them off and destroy them so thoroughly that their very name will be forgotten. That is a Holocaust level of hatred and destruction, and this time around it'll go beyond the Jews, extending also to the Americans and British. That's what this prophecy in Psalm 83 is all about. It shows us that Turkey will continue to edge more and more into the German camp, as will the other Middle Eastern countries mentioned earlier. And when they are aligned with Europe, under the sway of a German strongman, they will war to try to ensure that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. So if you understand your Bible, you should see special significance in Erdogan's Turkey breaking with Putin's Russia and instead aligning more with Europe. This shows that an era of unprecedented global war and suffering is rapidly approaching, but there's also deep hope tied into all of this, because the Bible makes clear that God will not allow the Germans, Turks, and others to accomplish their diabolical goal. Yes, there will be war, and the US, UK, and Israel will be punished severely, more so than at any time in their history. But the Bible makes plain that before they're wiped out, the Creator will intervene and end the violence. And He'll usher in an age of peace for the peoples of Turkey, Russia, Germany, America, Britain, Israel, and the whole world.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour here on KPCG 101.3 FM, and our next segment is about a shift that is underway in German society. This is quite similar in many ways to what's happening in the U.S. and other Western countries, just shifting away from more traditionally Catholic and traditionally Protestant kind of values and toward a radical, almost Babylonian level of licentious living. And in the case of Germany, there's only one real political body standing ready to challenge this shift, and that is a far-right party. So this changing landscape is pulling the nation in two different directions, as we'll hear about now in this report from trumpet writer Josue Michels.
Germany's cabinet approved a plan on August 23rd to make it easier for transgender, intersex, and non-binary people to change their name and gender in official documents. The legislation aims to make life easier for, quote, a small group for which it has great significance, end of quote, the justice minister said. In the meantime, a push for, quote, sexual education, end of quote, in German kindergartens aims to recruit the next generation for the movement. The only party that is fundamentally opposed to the perversion is the far-right Alternative für Deutschland Party, AfD. The queer network, which is financially supported and promoted by the state of North Rhine-Westphalia, produced a 2022 handout that reads, "Avoid books that talk about men and women. The requirement to have a child is not to be a woman, but to have a uterus and ovaries. Men can do that too," end of quote. It also notes that if boys don't have the opportunity to try nail polish at home, they should be able to do so in the daycare center. Germany's publication Welt reported on August 23rd on the sexual education at a daycare in Kerpen, North Rhine-Westphalia. The center offers, quote, children space to try out their childlike sexuality, end of quote, and that, quote, masturbation is something normal, end of quote. The liberal trend has also engulfed religiously underpinned centers. The 2022 concept paper of the Catholic Daycare Center in St. Maria Rosenkranz Königin in North Rhine-Westphalia states, quote, dealing positively with sexuality and physicality makes an essential contribution to the development of children's identity and strengthens their self-esteem and self-confidence, end of quote. The center allows children to explore their sexual curiosity, quote, children begin to take an interest in the gender of other children between the ages of 3 and 6, or even earlier. They compare themselves to people of the same sex and explore the opposite sex. The center states and offers, quote, based on the needs, interests, and desires of the children, situational occasions for play and learning processes, end of quote. Right now, the concepts may be ahead of the current reality in most daycare centers, but if this isn't stopped, the wildest perversions will engulf our youngest generation. But if you want to democratically oppose the perversions of the next generation in Germany, you have to vote for a party that also seeks to rewrite Germany's view on the Holocaust. You will be accused of being a Nazi and called the enemy of democracy. Germany today is heading the way of Babylon of old. We are seeing the same Babylonian perversions once again. Fittingly, a famous German TV series is entitled Babylon Berlin and depicts Berlin of Germany's Weimarer Republic in 1929. The producers describe the period this way: speculation and inflation are already tearing away the foundations of the still young Weimarer Republic. Growing poverty and unemployment stand in stark contrast to the excess and indulgence of the city's nightlife and its overflowing creative energy, end of quote. Looking at Germany and Berlin today, we're seeing the same trends repeat themselves. In March 2018, the Washington Post characterized it as a show of classic Weimar stereotypes. Quote, flapper girls and Nazi stormtroopers, prostitutes and proletarians, jazz troops and jackboots, end of quote. The filmmakers saw the biblical and historical accounts of the ancient city Babylon as a perfect description of Weimar, Berlin. Cultural journalist Jens Balkenborg noted, quote, this Berlin is a Moloch. Sin, corruption and violence lurk around every corner, as in the myth surrounding the biblical city, end of quote. The Bible calls Babylon a whore because of the city's immorality. Little do these filmmakers know how accurate their description is. The Bible describes not only the sins of ancient Babylon, but also the moralities of our modern day. Revelation 18 prophesies of the fall of this all-engulfing Babylonic system and pleads with the people of our generation. In verse 4 we read, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues. Some in Germany today praise Adolf Hitler for quote-unquote confronting these Babylonic perversions. These same people ignore the fact that neither Hitler nor anyone in his closed circle was an example for family life. The early days of the Nazi Party were plagued by homosexual depravity. The book The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich notes about the Nazis' paramilitary organization SA, quote, many of its top leaders, beginning with its chief, Ernst Röhm, were notorious homosexual perverts, end of quote. Röhm is described as a tough, ruthless, driving man, albeit, like so many of the early Nazis, a homosexual, end of quote. Early on, Hitler needed the support of anyone he could get, and he lacked the means to hide the perversions. Quote, murderers, pimps, homosexuals, perverts, drug addicts, or just plain rowdies were all the same to him if they served his purposes, end of quote. Hitler also failed in his relations with the opposite sex. As the book recounts, quote, it is probable that Hitler intended to marry his niece, end of quote. This failure in love is said to have contributed to his later evils. Nazis later persecuted homosexuals, learned to use the tool of propaganda, but they never learned to live a moral life. No human being, no political party, no church of this world can save us from the sins of Babylon, which include much more than above perversions. Astoundingly, the Bible reveals in Revelation 17 that the Babylonian system would again be revived in modern Europe. Revelation 18:10 is a prophecy of the coming judgment of the Babylonian system that is yet to be fulfilled. Standing afar off, for the fear of the torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is your judgment come. This is not a prophecy for ancient Babylon, but for those who continue its tradition. In the plain truth, August 1959, Herbert W. Armstrong stated concerning the reference to Babylon in Revelation 18, quote, notice that this final union of 10 nations in Europe is called by the prophetic name Babylon, verse 2. It is merely the continuation of the ancient Babylonic system, a union of politics and religion and great economic cartels, whose purpose is to rule the world, end of quote. Satan, the god of this world, is a master at deceiving people. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 4 state that he is the God of this world. Revelation 12 verse 9 state that he deceived the whole world. It includes our society, our religious institutions, and everything that we see in this world. Parents need to beware of Satan's attacks. They need to cry out to God and take charge of the education of their children. The perversions of this world will continue until Jesus Christ himself ends them at his return, which you can read about in Matthew 24. That's why we must pray, "Thy kingdom come." God's coming kingdom needs real educators. It needs leaders who know how to teach truth. It needs men and women who have learned to come out of Babylon and overcome the pulls of society. That's why God is calling out of you today, as you can read in John 6, verse 44. They are learning how to thrive despite living in the midst of Babylon. God's way of life is greatly different from that of our modern society or from any society in our world's history. Learn about his wonderful way of life and how to protect your children's minds from today's perversions in Herbert W. Armstrong's classic work, The Missing Dimension in Sex. Only God can save us from the Babylonian perversions of this world, in whatever ways they may come. No government of this world, no political party, no single individual can do it for us.
This is Trumpet Hour.
Thank you for staying with us today on this episode of Trumpet Hour. I'm Jeremiah Jacques, and for our next segment here, we'll look at the way that research, which was originally conducted in part by using fetal cell lines, is now used in numerous common products. And we'll hear all about this now in this report from Mr. Abraham Blondeau.
Surprised, but it still hits really hard. I'm from Texas, and in Texas they plan to criminalize abortion, which means up to life sentences for abortion providers. And I'm just very afraid for the world that we've just stepped into, that it's no longer a matter of can somebody get sued for you having an abortion. It's now can somebody go to prison for life.
I think it's going to impact not just women. I mean, certainly women are directly impacted by this decision, but I think that the most troubling aspect is that this is just the beginning.
I knew it was coming. What we need to do as women, organize, don't agonize, organize. We are the majority. We just need to come out.
This decision must not stand!
This decision must not stand!
Legal abortion on demand!
Legal abortion on demand! My response simply is that all we want is our right to choose. If you want to have a child, go ahead and have a child. If you want to leave your child at the doorstep, go ahead and leave your child at the doorstep. But for us, we can't live with that.
Those are some of the emotional reactions to the June 24th, 2022 Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade, the landmark case that made abortion legal in the United States. The outcry of protesters was a display of unhinged, irrational emotion. It was framed as an attack on women's rights, women's health, and taking away their right to choose an abortion. Now, the Supreme Court decision didn't ban abortion, but merely left it to each of the states to decide. Yet this remains one of the most emotional, explosive, and divisive subjects in our society. Abortion is a gruesome and uncomfortable subject to discuss. We often confine it to hospitals or clinics where it is done in secret, in private. We think of it only affecting women, families, who choose to be a part of an abortion. But did you know that you, me, all of us, are directly impacted by abortion? Did you know that the food you eat, the medicines or drugs you take, are connected to abortion? The shocking truth is abortion is intricately tied to the food and drug industry. In fact, the United States is the center of an abortion industrial complex where murdered unborn children are used to create profit. When all downstream industries are taken into account, we are talking about billions of dollars. This is the shadowy part of America the media and government try to hide and obscure. But you need to know the truth. The abortion industrial complex needs to be exposed. Most importantly, this billion-dollar behemoth is an affront to the Creator God, whose image is imprinted on all the unborn children sacrificed for making profit. For our listeners, please note that some of this content could be graphic or disturbing, so please continue listening at your own discretion. So first, how is abortion tied to the food and medical industries? These industries use fetal cells gathered from abortions to test and develop products. These fetal cells are derived from different body parts from abortions from over the past 60 years. Doctors take these cells and create what we call cell lines, which can then be used in research by observing how they react to different tests, whether it is a new flavor additive, drug, or vaccine. The two most important are called HEK293 and PERC6. Both cell lines were created from tissue gathered by Dr. Alex van der Erb in the Netherlands. PERC6 was created from human embryonic retina cells from an 18-week-old fetus aborted in 1985. Dr. van der Erb said in 2001, quote, "So I isolated retina from a fetus, from a healthy fetus, as far as could be seen, of 18 weeks old. The mother was completely normal. There was nothing wrong with the mother. She had at least two children afterward in the same hospital in Leiden, which were completely healthy. The father was not known, not to the hospital anymore," end quote. An 18-week fetus is about the size of a cucumber, with its own unique fingerprints and capable of hearing sounds outside the womb, including the parent's voice. PERC6 was dissected and the cell lines are now used for gene therapy. HEK293 is probably the most important cell line produced and most widely used by the medical field. The reason for this is because Canadian Dr. Frank Graham was able to figure out a way to modify the cells so it has an infinite number of divisions, ensuring doctors will always be able to use it for research. HEK, the letters at the start of the cell line name, refers to human embryonic kidney. Cells are gathered from kidney tissue from the aborted baby. The number 293 refers to the amount of experimental attempts the researchers need to create a working cell line. In other words, it took 293 attempts to make a cell line from aborted kidney tissue. That means it took hundreds of kidneys from hundreds of aborted babies in order to create that one cell line. However, the most disturbing fact about all of this is how they harvested the kidneys. Kidney tissue must be harvested from the infant while the baby is still alive. Only late-term abortions can be used to harvest kidneys in order to ensure the organs are fully developed. The infant is removed using a cesarean or by induced labor. Drugs cannot be used during the procedures as that would damage the kidney samples. In a story by Fox News, the University of Pittsburgh stated that blood is still flowing from the heart to the kidney while the organ is being removed from the infant. Fox News wrote, quote, "The documents uncovered by Judicial Watch also show the University of Pittsburgh discussing its efforts to minimize warm ischemic time, or the amount of time an organ maintains its body temperature after blood flow has been severed," end quote. The University of Pittsburgh Vice Chancellor stated, quote, "Ischemia time refers to the time after the tissue collection procedure and before cooling for storage and transport," end quote. So, the University of Pittsburgh admitted that the fetal organs do not undergo ischemia, lose their blood supply, until after the tissue collection procedure. This means the organs are still receiving blood supply from the fetal heartbeat during the tissue collection. So PERC6 and HEK293 are just two examples of fetal cell lines used for vaccines and research. So that's how the cell lines are created. Now let's turn our attention to the food industry. So how would the food industry use these cell lines in creating their products? Well, one of the main companies that uses the fetal cell lines is called Cenomics. And so they're a biotech company and they use cell lines, specifically HEK293, for the research and development of new flavor additives. So the fetal cell lines are not actually in the food or beverages or in the flavor additive. What they do is use the flavor receptors in the kidney cells in order to test the taste of their additive. And this is in opposition to having a human sit there and keep taste testing their different flavors. So some of the companies that have had a relationship with Cenomics, they include Nestle, Kraft, Pepsi. Pepsi ended their relationship with Cenomics in 2019, but it's a pretty widespread use. CBS News investigated this, and they found that all but seven of Cenomics's 77 patents refer to the use of HEK293 cell lines in their production of flavor additives. So some of the food companies that have used Cenomics in the past, or they may still have a relationship with them. So that's been Pepsi. Now, they, like I said, they ended that in 2019, but Pepsi includes Pepsi soft drinks, Ocean Spray beverages, Aquafina, Seattle's Best Coffee, Lipton teas, Gatorade, Tropicana juices. Nestle's another big company that uses them. So they're coffee creamers, instant soups, ketchup, sauces, instant noodles. Kraft was another company, which includes Cadbury products. So chewing gum, Chiclets, Dentine, different kind of the candies that you see in the store, Sour, Cherry Blast, Fruit Mania, Swedish Berries, Bassettes, Licorice, all sorts, Fuzzy Peaches, Mini Fruit Gums, all those things. These companies, they've worked with Cenomics to use flavor additives. Now, it's almost impossible to find out which exact products would use some of those additives. That is not available information online. However, this is just food for thought. This information, you choose to do with it, but that's, we're providing the information to you. How the food industry uses it pales in comparison to how the medical industry uses it, because fetal research is a worldwide industry. So in the world, there are about 87 abortions per minute, or 40 to 50 million per year. In the United States alone, there are 2 abortions per minute. So according to an Insight article in 1999, Brenda Bardsley, she's the vice president for the Anatomic Gift Foundation, she found in her research that 75% of women agree to donate the fetal tissue to research. So when a woman goes in to have an abortion, they can decide if they'd like to use that fetal tissue for research or not. If you take those outdated statistics from 1999, that's over 730,000 aborted babies per year would be used for medical research. Well, in the United States, it's illegal to sell fetal body parts, but what the medical system did was they found a workaround. Abortion clinics, they're the ones who take the aborted fetus and then they'll take the baby and dissect it. And then instead of selling it to researchers or labs, they'll donate it to those researchers, and then the labs will send a donation back to them, which will cover their running costs. And so to give you an idea of how lucrative this industry is, so that same Insight magazine article from 1999, they said that each organization's a little different, but this is generally how much they'll charge, about $280 per specimen of fetal tissue. Liver is about $150, $500 for a trunk, meaning they've removed the limbs, $325 for a spinal cord. So you have these different researchers, they'll look at what's available and they'll ask the clinics to send them to different body parts they want for their research. In a way, it's hard to believe the callousness in the way that a child's body parts are treated. But this is just a glimpse about how massive the abortion industrial complex is. In the medical industry, nearly every vaccine has used fetal cell lines for their development. So while they're producing the vaccine, they'll test it on these cell lines. So that includes chickenpox, all the COVID-19 vaccines, hepatitis, measles, rabies, rubella, smallpox, just to name a few. And then even over-the-counter medications are tested on fetal cell lines. A lot of the compounds used in these sort of things, they were developed before this. They were developed independently. But these drugs are still tested on fetal cell lines. Here's just a list of some of the common over-the-counter medications that are tested specifically on HEK293. Tylenol, Advil, aspirin, Aleve, Benadryl, Claritin, Robitussin, Mucinex, Tums, just to name a few. After hearing all this, just step back and ask yourself, how many of these food and medical products do you interact with every day? So when we step back and think about just how far-reaching the abortion industrial complex is in our society, it's pretty sickening and stunning at the same time. And so it leads you to ask the question, well, how much money has been gained on the backs of aborted children? This is impossible to really quantify and to know because so much of the information is impossible to find out. But here, just consider some of these facts. Some of the companies that have been proven to use fetal cell research. Pfizer and Moderna, they make $65,000 profit per minute. It is estimated that Tylenol sales average about $300 million per year. If you take the statistics from that 1999 Insight magazine article and the amount of abortions that are used for fetal research every year in the United States, around $200 million in fetal tissue is sold per year. And that's an estimation on the low side. The food additives market is worth $37 billion per year. And we know a portion of that is involved in fetal cell line research. This abortion industrial complex is worth billions of dollars. This puts the outrage over Roe v. Wade in a different light. Is the push for legal abortions driven by women's rights organizations or by the abortion industrial complex? Who stands to gain the most? A single woman making the choice to have an abortion? Or these industry giants making millions or billions of dollars per year? So now we come to the most important question about this controversial subject. What does God and the Bible think about abortion and the dissecting of babies? Referring to Micah 3, verses 1 through 3, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury wrote in March 2021, quote, God's evaluation of our justice system here is likely the grisliest metaphor in the Bible. Could America's courts really be this bad? It was the Supreme Court that legalized abortion in 1973. The Supreme Court has invented a constitutional right to have an abortion and will strike down any law that violates this right. Today, on average, a baby in America is aborted every 36 seconds. That's nearly a million babies a year being ripped apart or poisoned. This is what America does to the most vulnerable members of society. Is God extreme to say the courts break their bones and chop them in pieces? End quote. This grisly metaphor in Micah 3 really summarizes this shadowy, hidden industrial complex that's embedded into American society. COVID vaccines, food additives, over-the-counter medication. These are all a product of abortion and the dissecting of infants for research. Most of these things would not exist without fetal cell lines. God is wrathful at our nations for allowing such evil to take place. It is important that you're informed about this controversial issue. To learn more about this, please read our article on the Trumpet website. the disturbing link between abortion and COVID vaccines.
It's time for today's last word.
Our last word today is about the boundless value of studying the lives of great men and women and then emulating what is admirable in them in our own lives. For this, we'll turn to Mr. Grant Turgeon.
Everywhere you look, there are lessons to be learned. Many of these lessons involve other people. When you check the news or drive past an addict on the street, you see examples of people living the wrong way and facing dire consequences. And you feel sobered and willing to do whatever it takes to avoid their fate. When you watch sports or read a good biography, you find examples of people achieving success in a particular area. And you feel inspired to imitate them and realize similar results. There are billions of people on the planet, billions of examples of what to do or what not to do in your own life. Learning from the lives of others is a vital aspect of true education. True education is not something you go out and get, it's a way of life. It involves everything you think, say, and do each day, how your thoughts, words, and deeds align with God and His law. Pay attention to the successes and failures of other people, particularly the successes. Witness the law of cause and effect in action, how positive habits and character traits produce positive results in the lives of others. Inspiration can come from anyone, your friends, peers, family members, elders, heroes of history, superior athletes and musicians, even a small child. The Bible also reveals to us some examples we can follow within God's government. 1 Peter 2 verse 21 says, "For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example, that you should follow his steps." Follow Jesus Christ. Study Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to learn how Christ handled a variety of situations and challenges. Jesus Christ experienced all kinds of things that have everything to do with the way we're supposed to live today. Copy Christ. 1 Corinthians 11 verse 1 says, "Be you followers of me, even as I also am of Christ." When the Apostle Paul wrote this, he was the physical head of God's one true church. Paul was telling the brethren to follow God's man. Follow God's man. God always works through one man in his true church. We can prove to you that God used the late Worldwide Church of God founder Herbert W. Armstrong until his death in 1986. Over five decades of service in God's work. He learned hard lessons through business failures and poverty. He was humbled until he was basically forced to accept the Sabbath day. He also proved beyond the shadow of a doubt the existence of God and what God expects us to do in our lives. Mr. Armstrong wrote an autobiography, which you can get for free at thetrumpet.com. He said, "This autobiography is being written in the hope that these unusual life experiences may bring inspiration, encouragement, and benefit to many." Today, God is working through Philadelphia Church of God Pastor General Gerald Fleury. Tidbits of his life experiences can be uncovered in numerous church books and booklets available for free at thetrumpet.com, such as Raising the Ruins and the Book of Hebrews. You can learn about Mr. Fleury's faith and his work ethic and plenty of other positive traits. Copy God's man. In 2 Thessalonians 3, verses 7 through 9, in the Revised Standard Version, the Apostle Paul admonishes true Christians to imitate the ministry. Follow the ministry. Observe their conduct and conversation. Each minister has unique strengths that he expends in service to God's people and God's work. Copy the ministry. Copy the upstanding examples that you see all around you. Apply their principles of success in your own life, and you will be on your way to experiencing true education. To learn more, please request our free booklet, The 7 Laws of Success, at thetrumpet.com.
Well, we are now coming to the end of this episode of Trumpet Hour. Please check out our show notes for today's episode, either on SoundCloud or on thetrumpet.com, to find links to the articles that today's reports were based on, and for links to the other literature mentioned in the episode. And please send us any comments you may have about today's episode. The address is letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks very much to my guests today, Josue Michels, Mr. Abraham Blondeau, and Mr. Grant Turgeon. Thanks also to Isaac Lorenz and Nicholas Irwin for helping with the audio work for this episode. And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. Until next time, keep watching your world.